Turning now to the woman to whom we owe these insights, Alice Miller. The book For Your Own Good. Quote, this is where the difference lies, and this is sort of a transitional paragraph. We read this last week as well. I was hoping to think more about it. Maybe something will occur as I read it a second time, but anyway, it deserves multiple readings. This is where the difference lies between treating an adult and a child cruelly. The self has not yet sufficiently developed for a child to retain the memory of it or of the feelings it arouses. The knowledge that you were beaten and that this, as your parents tell you, was for your own good may well be retained, although not always. But the suffering caused by the way you were mistreated will remain unconscious and will later prevent you from empathizing with others. This is why battered children grow up to be mothers and fathers who beat their own offspring. From their ranks are recruited the most reliable executioners, concentration camp supervisors, prison guards, and torturers. They beat, mistreat, and torture out of an inner compulsion to repeat their own history. And they are able to do this without the slightest feeling of sympathy for their victims because they have identified with the aggressive side of their psyche. These people were beaten and humiliated themselves at such an early age that it was never possible for them to experience consciously the helpless, battered child they once were. In order to do this, they would have needed the aid of an understanding, supportive adult, and no such person was available. Only under these circumstances would children be able to see themselves as they are at that moment, namely, as weak, helpless, downtrodden, and battered, and thus be able to integrate this part into the self. Theoretically, a child beaten by his father could afterwards cry his heart out in the arms of a kind aunt and tell her what happened. She would not try to minimize the child's pain or justify the father's actions, but would give the whole experience its due weight. But such good fortune is rare. The wife of a child-beating father shares his attitude toward child-rearing or is herself his victim. In either case, she is rarely the child's advocate. Such an aunt is therefore a great exception, because the battered child is very unlikely to have that inner freedom to seek her out and make use of her. A child is more likely to opt for a terrible inner isolation and splitting off of his feelings than he is to tattle, quote-unquote, to outsiders about his father or mother. Psychotherapists know how long it sometimes takes before a child's resentment, which has been repressed for 30 or 40 or even 50 years, can be articulated and relived. Thus, it may well be that the plight of a little child who is abused is even worse and has more serious consequences for society than the plight of an adult in a concentration camp. The former camp inmate may sometimes find himself in a situation where he feels that he can never adequately communicate the horror of what he has gone through, and that others approach him without understanding, with cold and callous indifference, even with disbelief. But with few exceptions, he himself will not doubt the tragic nature of his experiences. He will never attempt to convince himself that the cruelty he was subjected to was for his own good, or interpret the absurdity of the camp as a necessary pedagogical measure. He will usually not attempt to empathize with the motives of his persecutors. He will find people who have had similar experiences and share with them his feelings of outrage, hatred, and despair over the cruelty he has suffered. The abused child does not have any of these options. As I have tried to show in the example of Christiane F., She is alone with her suffering, not only within the family, but also within herself. And because she cannot share her pain with anyone, she is also unable to create a place in her own soul where she could cry her heart out. No arms of a kind aunt exist there. Keep a stiff upper lip and be brave is the watchword. Defenselessness and helplessness find no haven in the self of the child, who later, identifying with the aggressor, persecutes these qualities wherever they appear. A person who from the beginning was forced, whether subjected to corporal punishment or not, to stifle, i.e. to condemn, split off, and persecute the vital child within himself will spend his whole life preventing this inner danger that he associates with spontaneous feelings from recurring. But psychological forces are so tenacious that they can rarely be thoroughly suppressed. They are constantly seeking outlets that will enable them to survive, often in very distorted forms that are not without danger to society. For example, one person suffering from grandiosity will project his own childish qualities onto the external world, whereas another will struggle against the evil, quote-unquote, within himself. Poisonous pedagogy shows how these two mechanisms are related to each other and how they are combined in a traditional religious upbringing. In addition to the degree of maturity and those elements of loyalty and isolation involved in the case of a child, there is another fundamental difference between abuse of children and of adults. The abused inmates of a concentration camp cannot, of course, offer any resistance, cannot defend themselves against humiliation, but they are inwardly free to hate their persecutors. The opportunity to experience their feelings, even to share them with other inmates, prevents them from having to surrender their self. This opportunity does not exist for children. They must not hate their father. This, the message of the fourth commandment, has been drummed into them from early childhood. They cannot hate him either, if they must fear losing his love as a result. Finally, they do not even want to hate him because they love him. Thus, children, unlike concentration camp inmates, are confronted by a tormentor they love, not one they hate. And this tragic complication will have a devastating influence on their entire subsequent life. Christiane F. writes, quote, I never hated him, but was just afraid of him. I was always proud of him, too, because he loved animals and because he had such a terrific car, his 62 Porsche. Unquote.